Thank you, thank you. It's great to be here tonight. My favorite singer sang before I preached, so if I don't know that I can preach anytime, but if I can ever preach, surely I could do it after my favorite. By the way, we just celebrated 47 years she's been putting up with me, and so thank God for that. The message I want to share tonight, I shared in a church in Missouri a few weeks ago, and I have not been able to get it off my mind. It's not one that I preach when I travel around the country, hardly ever, but I have not been able to get it off my mind. And I'll be reading my text from 2 Corinthians chapter 6 in just a few minutes. A lady by the name of Deborah Brown shared her story in a national magazine. This is from her life. She said, I was balancing the bag of groceries in one arm and pushing the kitchen door open with the other, and Meredith, my 11-year-old, was following me, talking a mile a minute. Mom, she said as I set everything down, you are not listening. I said, I am listening, and I put my brain on mental rewind. You were telling me about your math test tomorrow, and before that you were saying you didn't like PE class. Meredith sighed dramatically, then continued speaking to the back of my head. I put the groceries away, put the water on for spaghetti, then checked my email, all the while trying to keep up with my daughter's monologue, and I was saying, that's nice, 2 hours later, my husband Alan's car keys clanked into the tray by the back door. He began giving me the full rundown of the day's events at his real estate office. I put some more spaghetti and sauce on for his dinner, heated the peas in the microwave, sliced some breads. He said, I got the tickets for the game. Really, I mumbled while I was thinking to myself, where is Meredith? Has she finished her homework? It's getting late. She needs to get ready for bed real soon now. By the time I'd cleaned up in the kitchen, Alan was in the family room sitting in his easy chair across from Meredith. And he said, how was PE today, honey? Fine. Her eyes never left her book. Did you play volleyball or run? She turned the page. Answer me, sweetie. She finally looked up and said, answer what? My husband sighed, picked up the paper. You're just like your mother, he grumbled. You never listen to me. I said, what are you talking about? By the way, this story, I don't know what it does for you. This story really convicts me, all right? And my husband's face flushed. He said, it's true. When I'm talking, you're always doing other things. Cooking or answering your email or clearing the table. You say, but you don't hear half of what I say. And now our daughter Meredith is doing the same thing. And this was written before the cell phone craze, by the way. Now folks are always like this. Have you noticed that? She replies, Alan, doing two things at once, the only way I can get anything done around here. Just cause I'm not looking at you doesn't mean I don't hear you. Well, half the time you're tuning me out. Well, we'll talk about it later. But we didn't talk about it later. We both went to bed upset. Why didn't my husband get it? I was a busy person. Beside my job at the bank, I had to keep the house running, cook the meals, make sure our daughter got her homework done. I didn't have time to just stop and listen. I prayed that God would help him understand, but it was almost like I wondered if God was as busy as I was. A few weeks later, Alan and I attended a weekend seminar on internet businesses. Neither one of us had brought the listening issue up, but there was tension in the air. Tried to talk to God about it. My prayers felt futile, though, squeezed in between a million other things. So I was more than a little surprised when Saturday's speaker at the seminar, a communications expert, introduced his topic for the morning, which was effective listening. He said, I'd like everybody to try a simple exercise. Then he pointed right at my husband and me and said, we will start right here with this couple, and I'll share more of that story later in the message tonight. Now, I don't know about you, but I like to read biographies. You like biographies? And I love autobiographies where somebody writes their own story. Now, if I were to ask you, where do you find the most biographical information about the Apostle Paul, I think if you're thinking, you would say the book of Acts. But if I were to ask you, where do you find the most autobiographical information about the Apostle Paul? Where do you find the most where Paul himself wrote about himself? I think you would have to say that it would be the book of 2 Corinthians. Back years ago now, 84 and 85, I preached all the way through the book of 2 Corinthians. But there is one passage that stands out in my mind more clearly than any other, virtually any time I think of the book, and it's been over 30 years. And I'm not saying that this passage is any more important than any other, but it just seemed to grab me. It is the passage where it seems like the Apostle Paul revealed his heart. It is a cry from his heart. Now, in most all of Paul's letters, he told us something about himself. But this letter is by far the most personal of them all. We don't have any outward picture of what Paul looked at. But 2 Corinthians is probably the inward picture of Paul. I don't know whether I would have wanted to look like Paul looked on the outside or not. Neither do you, but I sure would like to have looked like he looked on the inside. And I think we would all have to say that. Here is the heart of the Apostle Paul. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 11. Paul says, O ye Corinthians, our mouth is open unto you. Our heart is enlarged. Ye are not straitened in us, but ye are straitened in your own bowels. Now what Paul is saying there is this. There's not a restriction in our communication because of what I have done. He says, you have restricted your insides from communicating with me. Now for a recompense in the same, I speak as unto my children, be ye also enlarged. He says, my heart has been enlarged to take you in. I want you to enlarge your heart. And I want to speak to you tonight on the subject, don't stop communicating. Everybody say that with me. Would you please all together, everybody? Don't stop communicating. Two symbols the Apostle Paul used in this passage. Watch me here. Everybody look at me, would you please? The open mouth and the enlarged heart. Did you see what he said? I owe you Corinthians, our mouth is open unto you, our heart is enlarged. Now I want you to get a picture of both of those in your minds. The open mouth is a symbol of full, open, honest, sincere communication. And the enlarged heart is a picture of a man who loves those who won't love him, who loves those who attack him, who loves those who criticize him. It is a picture of a man, the enlarged heart is a picture of a man who keeps a reservoir of forgiveness available to draw from the very moment that it is needed for any purpose. It is a picture of a man who loves those who aren't what they ought to be. Now, I have just really one or two points in this message tonight. I may not even get to the second one. I may just wind it up with the first one. But the first point is this. Don't stop communicating with family members who reject you or criticize you. Don't stop communicating with family members who reject you or criticize you or have a bad spirit toward you. They may reject you. They may reject your beliefs. They may reject your standards. They may reject it all. And it might be a son or a daughter-in-law or a daughter or a son-in-law or a dad or a mom or grandparents. Can I tell you why most people cut off communication? Because they sense rejection coming from this other person. And rejection hurts. In this same book, five chapters later, 2 Corinthians 11:2, Paul says, I'm jealous over you with godly jealousy, for I've espoused you to one husband that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. Now, I've given that verse many times in relation to getting to the marriage altar. It means a pure maiden saves her love for one man only. But you know, there is an even deeper meaning underlying that verse. Paul says, when he says that I may present you, I've espoused you to one husband, that I may present you as a chaste virgin to Christ. Paul is saying, I feel like your daddy. I feel like a father toward you. Now you know what, folks? There are some very unlovely family members in this world, but they need somebody to love them also. So you don't stop communicating even with family members who reject you or criticize you. There are some very unlovely people in the world all around us. But they need somebody to love them too. There are some very unlovely people in most churches. But they need somebody to love them too. How easy it is for some people to fight. How difficult it is for some people to communicate. Sometimes it even gets humorous. A convenience store in Mishawaka, Indiana. Two men walked in together, they were trying to rob the store. One of them had written a note telling what his intentions were. He handed it to the clerk behind the counter. The clerk read the note and couldn't understand it. And stood there and looked at the guy and said, now, I really don't understand what you're wanting me to do here. Whereupon the second guy who's trying to rob the store looks at the first guy and says, you can't even write a decent note. They don't understand what you're talking about. Now you're going to, and the two of them got in such an argument that they just turned around and walked out and never completed the robbery. It's easy for some people to fight. You know what? It's hard work. If there is a couple here and you communicate well, and I'll tell you who knows that, and that is the wife. Because most of us men are not very good communicators. But sometimes it's the other way around. It's interesting opening story. It was the other way around, wasn't it? Now, did you notice what Paul said to some people who honestly were not very good communicators, but he said, oh, you Corinthians, our mouth is open unto you, our heart is enlarged. Now, I want to try to draw you a picture here of this verse, the way I can see it in my mind. Here is your heart, or here is a heart. Here's somebody's heart. It's got a few people in it. Everybody has a few people in their heart. Some have a lot more, some have a few. Now here's a heart with a few people in it, and some of those people start fighting or misbehaving or criticizing us. And you know what the normal reaction is? It is to restrict our heart and squeeze them out. But what did the Apostle Paul do instead? He enlarged his heart. Did you know it takes more room for two people to fight than for two people to stand still? Brother Kite, come up here and let's show them. Let's have a fight. All right? Now, if we're just standing here and we're just shaking hands, carrying on a conversation, it doesn't take very much room to do that. But we get in a fight, man. It's going to take some room. You see what I'm saying? And did you know, thank you, Brother Kite, did you know that your heart is that way? That when there's somebody who is fighting with you, maybe there's two or three fighting with you, disagreeing with you, arguing with you, criticizing you, your heart will either enlarge to make room for them, or your heart will shrink and it will squeeze them out. But here's the thing. If your heart will enlarge when they get done fighting, there is more room for more people. If you can make room for somebody who argues with you, fights with you, criticizes you, attacks you, and you can continue to love them, then your heart has enlarged in order to help people. Now, I want you to get this. Oh, ye Corinthians, our mouth is open unto you. Everybody look this way. I want to get you involved. Everybody, I want you to do this right now. All right? Just look at me and do this. All right? Now I want you to do this. Open mouth and enlarged heart. Now do this. All right? Get your hands up and do this. Here is what the Apostle Paul is picturing. All right? Both together now. What are we talking about? We're talking about... You say it's a little ridiculous. Well, I know that, but you won't forget it either. Your mouth is open to continue to communicate, and your heart is enlarged in order to take people in. Did you know the heart of Jesus was big enough to take in the whole world? On the cross, He said, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. And when Jesus comes into your heart, He wants to make your heart and my heart like His heart. Have you ever thought about how small some people's heart is in comparison to what it could be and what it should be? May I tell you, your joy in life is determined by the size of your heart. Because joy comes from fellowship with other people. Joy doesn't come from things. It doesn't come from having new cars and houses and all this. Joy comes from fellowship with other people. Turn back to 2 Corinthians chapter 2, just one page back in my Bible, and notice what Paul says. If I make you sorry, then who is he then that maketh me glad? So he said, I don't want to cut things off with you because you're the one who makes me glad, but the same which is made sorry by me. And I wrote this same unto you. He's referring to 1 Corinthians, lest when I came, I should have sorrow from them of whom I ought to rejoice, having confidence in you all that my joy is the joy of you all. For out of much affliction and anguish of heart, I wrote unto you with many tears. Not that ye should be grieved, but that ye might know the love which I have more abundantly to you, unto you. So he was saying that there was affliction and anguish of heart and tears. And do you know why all of that was happening? Because of the way they were attacking the Apostle Paul. It is extraordinary how much they were attacking the Apostle Paul. In fact, that's the whole reason for this book. On his second missionary journey, Paul had spent a year and a half in Acts chapter 18 establishing the church at Corinth. He won Jews, Greeks, Gentiles to Christ. No sooner does he leave there than they get divided four different ways. False teachers come in. Terrible immorality surfaces in their midst. Does Paul give up on them? No. He writes the letter that we call 1 Corinthians. He was pretty tough in that letter. Did it solve their problems? Well, yes and no. Some of the things Paul wrote them about, they listened to. But some people just got mad at Paul. They attacked him. They falsely accused him. What does Paul do? Now watch me. What do we tend to do when somebody attacks us? When somebody falsely accuses us? When they criticize us? We tend to say, I'm done with you. That's it. That was the last straw. Does Paul do that? No. Paul communicates more than ever now. I flipped through my Bible. And you know what? I found the letters that Paul wrote. 14 pages he wrote to the church at Rome, a church that he had not been to yet. 5 pages he wrote to the church at Galatia. 5 pages to Ephesians. 3.5 pages to the church at Philippi. 3 pages to the church at Colossae. 5 pages to the church at Thessalonians. 22 pages to the Corinthians. He communicated more with the Corinthians than any other church. The church that attacked him the most. The church that criticized him the most. The church that, even when they got involved in false doctrine, Paul would not give up on them. Now, notice how they attacked him. And I don't have time to go into this detail. I'm just going to give it to you. You can go back and read it for yourself. In chapter 10, verse 10, they said this, "His letters are weighty and powerful, but his bodily presence is weak and his speech contemptible." You know what they were saying? Paul's a lousy preacher. Yeah. Now, when you can criticize the Apostle Paul, you can criticize about anybody. You know that Paul gave a bold answer. He said, "Though I be rude in speech, yet not in knowledge." He said, "I might be a poor speaker, but at least I know what I'm talking about. What good is eloquent ignorance?" Amen? Paul was criticized more after his first letter than he was before. In 2 Corinthians chapter 1, he was accused of not being serious, of not being spiritual, of being fickle, of being double-tongued. He said he was going to come and see us, and he didn't show up. And Paul wrote them and said, "I was pressed out of measure. I was despairing even of life itself." And he said, "I just couldn't get there." But he wrote them. In chapter 3, verses 1 and 2, they questioned his right to even come and preach and said, "Maybe he needs to bring letters of recommendation before he comes here." And he said, "You are our epistles written in our heart." Chapter 5, verses 12 and 13, they said he was proud and boastful, maybe even a little crazy. The phrase is, "beside ourselves." In chapter 11, verses 7 through 12, he could not be a man of God. He would not take any financial support while he was there. And in chapter 12, verses 16 through 18, they accused Paul of being crafty and deceitful and said that though he said he didn't take any money while he was there, surely he figured out some way to do it that we didn't know about. So, he's attacked for not taking anything. He's attacked because somebody said he did take something. Now, if you'd written a letter to help somebody and then found out that after you wrote it, they'd made all these accusations against you, what would your response be? "I'm done with it." You know what Paul did? He looked at the positive side. Before there were four divisions in the church, now there were only two. Those for Paul and those against him. "Oh, ye Corinthians, our mouth is open unto you. I will not stop communicating with you. I will not stop writing you." The solution to problems is not cutting off communication. The solution to problems, if there is one, is communication. Divisions come because someone no longer loves enough to enlarge his heart enough to communicate. Divorce often comes as a result of somebody no longer caring or loving enough to continue to communicate. You know, I'm against divorce and remarriage, and I've preached about that before. I'm not going to talk about that tonight. But you know what? Those consequences are not fixed and certain and unchangeable and unstoppable. Many children of parents who have separated have still built wonderful, strong, solid, godly marriages. And many folks who have been divorced have still been able to build a good marriage in the future. You know why? Because they don't give up when they have problems. They do not shut the other person out. They continue to communicate. Now, I'm not at the end of my message yet, but I'm going to finish my opening story. Remember, this husband and wife are at this seminar, and this communications expert is singling them out and saying to them, we're going to start with them, and he says, "For 90 seconds, I want one of you to tell your partner about something that's bothering you. The other person is to remain completely silent, then we'll repeat the exercise the other way around." My husband shrugged, and I said, this is the lady talking, "You first." And my mouth went dry, and the speaker started his stopwatch for 90 seconds, and my husband began, Honey, I've been worried about Meredith. She's in a different school with new friends. I know she has to take PE every day and she doesn't like it. I keep trying to talk to her about it, but I'm just not reaching her. He hesitated for a moment. Meredith's not the only one I'm having trouble reaching, Debbie. I think you tuned me out. Sharing my life and my thoughts with you is important to me, but a lot of the time it feels like you're on autopilot. You may think you're hearing me, but you're not. Not really. I was squirming inside, but the 90 seconds weren't up. He continued, his eyes focused on mine. I want us to do better with Meredith and with each other. Maybe I can go jogging with her or give her some pointers to help her get more comfortable with PE. As for you and me, and the speaker announced, switch. I took a deep breath. I said, Alan, you're right. I get so busy with all the things I'm doing that even though I think I'm listening, I'm not always concentrating. Could I stop right here and ask you, are you concentrating? Are you paying attention? It is so easy, not only in church, but with your mate especially. Read the newspaper, look at the cell phone, all these different things. She said, I care about you and your work, what you're thinking about, even the little details, and I know you care about me, and maybe we need to try something different with each other. Maybe something like what we're doing right now. And the speaker said, time's up. And my husband and I stared at each other for a moment, a little stunned at what had just happened. We both said what was on our minds without distraction or interruption, and we both listened to each other. And the leader said, communication is more than just information. You can clear up many misunderstandings in the office and at home just by taking the time to listen carefully. That exercise took 3 minutes, but I think you'll all agree that it was a good use of time. And then driving back home, Alan and I were determined to put some new rules into practice. No TV running in the background. Dinner is a family event with no distractions. And when someone is talking, we are going to make a point to listen. Now, folks, get this thought, would you? Married people here, don't stop communicating. Parents, don't stop communicating. Children, don't stop. Grandparents, don't. Listen to me. The door that is marked communication has to be deliberately kept open. It has an automatic door closer on it that is marked T-I-M-E time. And that door, you push that door open and it will be just a little bit and it will close itself. And unless you keep and prop and push the door of communication open, it will almost always close itself. A preacher friend wrote this, men have a tendency to speak in a demeaning way to their wives rather than a loving, considerate way. We men say what we think, and thus, for the most part, we say a lot of dumb things. Amen, guys. Men are so regimented, we say what seems to be practical, but it's not always tactful. Women are different in that they say the right things, but in a sarcastic, sometimes hateful way. It doesn't take many years or even months of this kind of communication before one or both decide that the path of least resistance is to stop any serious form of communication altogether. Now, the man who wrote that is a preacher friend of mine who used to pastor up until the night that he stood up in front of his church and announced that his wife was leaving and divorcing him. And he said, We tried to communicate, but he said every time we communicated, we were fighting, so I just stopped communicating. And he said, without knowing what was happening, we have drifted so far apart now. My wife doesn't feel like it can be put back together. I have a cartoon here that is very interesting. Picture this. Let me draw this picture for you. There's an old man sitting in front of a TV set with a newspaper in front of him, and he's looking around the corner, and his wife, an older lady, standing there with shoulders down, and she says this, you have the right to put down the paper, turn off the TV, and engage in conversation. And if you refuse this right, everything you don't say will be held against you for the rest of your miserable life. Somebody said, you can talk to a man about anything. He won't understand you, but you can try to talk to him anyway. So many times, especially in the last few months, we have counseled with parents of a rebellious teenager or a rebellious young adult who's just decided to go their own way and do what they want to do. And they've had to cut him off from the rest of the children. Usually it's a firstborn, sometimes it's a secondborn, and they realize they got a bunch more children at home. If they don't cut him off from the rest of the children, that he's going to destroy all those children. And then I say to those parents, you must do your best to keep that door of communication open, because that open door of communication between you and them is the entrance that they will find back to the Lord. And if you don't keep that door open between you and them, there may not be an entrance for them to come back. You visit every chance you can. You write all you can. You call you every chance you can. You keep the lines of communication open. Somebody said, if you really love somebody, tell them, I love you a lot, because we tend to forget. The more rebellious somebody is, the more they criticize you, the more they attack you, the more they hate you, the more you need to look back and say, every chance you can, I love you. A teenage daughter, her mom and dad had gone through a divorce. And while it was happening, she became increasingly rebellious. That's a normal response. She's feeling very insecure. It culminated late one night when the police called to tell her that she had to come to the police station. The mother needed to come to the police station to pick up her daughter who had been arrested for drunk driving. They didn't talk at all until the next afternoon, and Mom broke the tension by handing her daughter a small gift-wrapped box. Her daughter flippantly opened it and saw inside a little rock, rolled her eyes and said, "Cute, Mom, what's this about?" And her mom handed her a card. And the daughter opened the envelope, took the card out and read it, and tears started trickling down her cheeks. She got up and gave her mom a big hug as the card fell to the floor. And on the card were these words, "This rock is more than 6,000 years old, and that's how long it's going to take before I give up on you." You don't do it. You don't stop communicating. I talked to some parents who had a problem with a 16-year-old second-born daughter. They let her go to her lost grandparents for 2 weeks, and those lost grandparents mocked her beliefs and standards. And I said to them, now, you can't let her go to those grandparents again, but you must not shut those grandparents out. That door of communication between you and your parents needs to be open as widely as it can be open, if it possibly can be. The family has had a rebellious son, and the dad's had a major problem with anger. And because of that, the boy's just getting worse and worse. And we talked to the dad and told him that he needed to deal with this problem that he's got. And so he began to deal with his problem. And then we counseled him. We said, you've got to reestablish communication with this boy. You and he are not communicating at all. Now here's what you need to do. We gave him an idea. Take a piece of candy, wrapped candy. Unwrap the wrapped candy. Put a note inside and say, the note can say, I love you. The note can say, I miss you. The note can say, I'm glad you're my son. The note could say, I remember a special time. You remember that special time when we made that trip together? One little note every day. Give that to your son. You know what that young man did with those notes? He kept every one of them. You know why? Because even a rebel hungers for the praise and acceptance of his dad. It's built into human life. Even the rebel hungers for his dad to communicate with him. We counsel with another family. Similar situation, rebellious 17-year-old son. Been living with his grandparents for a year. In that year's time, the boy has gotten worse into all kinds of things. And we said to them, you know, what you need to do, you can't call the boy. He won't talk to you on the telephone. And the grandparents aren't in favor of much communication here, but you could send a postcard. A postcard is an open letter. If it's a closed letter, the boy might not ever get it. But send a postcard. Every other day, mail a postcard that says, we're thinking about you, we love you, just a short little note. Why? Because you've got to get the door of communication open again. You can't let that door close. You can't help people if the door of communication is not open. There was a, years ago, on the south side of town here, I used to have a bus route. And I still remember knocking on the door one day in a trailer park, and there was a little girl who used to ride my bus from that trailer park. And the mother came to the door, looked at me, and she said, well, my daughter won't be riding the bus anymore. And I said, oh, I'm sorry. What's happened? Did I do something wrong? No. She burst into tears. She said, my husband just filed for divorce. And then she said this, and I've never forgotten it. She said, if we had just communicated as much over the last 3 years as we did over the last week, I think we could have made it. You know what? She's right. If they would have just kept communicating, that is the key to healing or building any relationship. I have a letter here. Somebody asked me my advice. A woman I know is 20 and unmarried. She's been wearing the wrong kind of clothes, speaking to ungodly people, is told countless lies, all kinds of things they describe here. And then they say, her brothers have decided not to have a relationship anymore with her. They are committed Christians, and that they are not going to have any relationship with her outside of hello and goodbye. And the verses that they give to support this are these verses. By the way, these verses, I believe, are used wrongly an awful lot to support cutting somebody off when you need to communicate with them. 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Several verses there, but especially verse 11. But now I've written unto you not to keep company. If any man that is called a brother be a fornicator or covetous or an idolater or a railer or a drunkard or an extortioner, with such an one, know not to eat. And the mistake there is the way they are applying that verse. If you study that verse is given to the entire church at Corinth because of this one person who is coming to church, living a terribly wicked life, and coming to church and acting like he's not doing anything wrong. And Paul said this, a really key thought. He said, don't you know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump? He's warning the people in the church, that man was leaven to them. That doesn't mean nobody should have communication with that man. Those who are strong, who would not be corrupted by that man's sin, should continue to go to that man and talk to him and tell him to love him. Another verse that they use is 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 6 and verse 14. Now we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that ye withdraw yourselves from every brother that walketh disorderly, and not after the tradition which he received of us. And if any obey not our word by this epistle, note that man, have no company with him, that he may be ashamed. Now study that in the context, and the context is this. There were some lazy people in the church who were mooching off the weak people in the church. And he says, you got to note that man, and you can't keep hanging around him like you are. That doesn't mean that stronger Christians should not still love and reach out to those people. Strong Christians must be the ones who are always, in fact, you can almost always tell the strongest Christians. Because even those who criticize, I've had people attack me, criticize me, do all kinds of things. Had a situation some time back. I sat down, wrote a letter telling the person I loved them and sent a gift card. What was I doing? So far it hadn't done any good, but I haven't given up. Because I won't. You can't always do it, but if you can, you do everything to keep that door from closing. I'll close with this story. I was in Iowa years ago. I was speaking at the camp over there. There's a boy there named by the name of Keith. He was he lived 45 miles away. That boy kept coming up to me, shaking hands every service, after the service. He's right there. I'm trying to fellowship with some other people. This boy's standing right there. I'm in the dining hall trying to talk to people. He walks up, outdoor activities. I'm standing talking to some other preachers. He barges right in. I was just ready to say to that boy, "You are driving me crazy," when I thought this thought. I wonder if Keith has a daddy. Next meal, here comes Keith. And I looked at him and I said, "Keith, let me ask you a question. You live with your folks?" Head drops. "Well, sort of. I live with my mom. See, my real dad, my mom wouldn't marry him because he wouldn't keep a job. And my stepdad, my mom divorced him because they couldn't get along and he wouldn't work. And my mom has a boyfriend now, but I don't know about him." What if I had cut Keith off? Keith didn't need less communication. He needed more communication. Now, if you're weak in the faith, then sometimes you can't help somebody who is attacking the faith, who is attacking the church and so on. But you know what? Moms and dads, grandparents, if you're strong enough, don't stop communicating. The mouth must be open. The heart must be enlarged. Would you bow with me, please?